from the studios of Fox Sports Knoxville, this is It's Optional with Trey Wallace, Chance Collins, and Brendan Johns. What do you see?
Dobbs needs it. They're bunched up in the end zone. It's tipped up. It's caught. It is caught. Juwan Jennings. Juwan Jennings.
Bobo, and he just dumps it off for a first down.
Throws it, fakes the spike. And it ends up touchdown. Whoa. Jordan Lasley.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap, and the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson, and he scores on the last play of the game.
It's Optional. Happy Hump Day. Wednesday, we're here. We're rolling along. Tennessee gets a nice win last night versus Georgia Tech. Man, we're halfway through the week. We're rolling down. Two more games left in the SEC slate for Tennessee football this year. Missouri coming up on Saturday. Then Vanderbilt to wrap up the season. We're getting there. News of the... There's just news all over. I mean, Golden State's going through crap. Le'Veon Bell didn't show up. Nobody, you know, it was kind of expected. Tennessee still working on some recruits. Just a busy November. I didn't think it would be like this. I didn't, but I love it. Next week, Tennessee heads to Brooklyn, playing in the Barclays Center, playing the NIT preseason tip-off. Going to play Louisville. Back-to-back ACC teams for the Volunteers. Last night was a, you know, it was a gritty performance. Tennessee played good on defense. Georgia Tech committed, like, I think it was 28 personal fouls last night. It was just ugly. But Tennessee didn't shoot well from the free throw line. Tennessee turned the ball over. And they still won by 13. So, no tripping from last night. Tennessee's still rolling. And it's early. It's November. Hell, we're two games into the season. Three games into the season. Nothing to... Last night's performance didn't... It proved to me that this team is going to be really good guarding the perimeter. And they're going to be really good on the down low. And also, it showed me that Luke Fulkerson.
I don't know where you got that one from.
Luke Fulkerson. No, I had that name in my head, Luke, for some reason earlier. I have no idea why. John Fulkerson played good coming off the bench last night. He really did. He's going to be a key component to Tennessee winning this year. Kyle Alexander, he's just a beast down low. Just a big old guy who's put on some weight, you could tell. And he's just a force down low, and I think you're going to start seeing them use him more. Derek Walker didn't get any play time last night. If you don't practice well, you don't get play time. Lamonte Turner expected to be back by Louisville. We'll see. He's still dealing with that shoulder. Look, if Tennessee can get out of November healthy and not needing Lamonte Turner too much, I think this team is going to be set up to be one gritty, tough bunch come December and the rest of the season. Like, if they can just get through the next 2 weeks rolling with Bone and Bowden up top, this Volunteer squad, once they get Lamonte Turner back, will be an absolute force to deal with. And I had some people ask me last night, like, is this team as good as last year? Yeah, they're better. And here's where it gets interesting. I don't know if this team will end up winning as many regular season games because the SEC is so good, but I think they can make the runs in the SEC tournament in March. Like, they're going to be good. They're going to be top 10 good all year.
They're going to be, I mean, in my opinion, I think that, yeah, top 10 good all year. I don't believe they'll slip out of the top 10, you know, nationally. And in the SEC, yeah, I think they'll struggle with a couple games on the road. I think home court is going to be huge. And right now we see that pretty good crowds coming out so far. Everybody's
a nice crowd last night.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Everybody's hyped about the season. So I think when you get to SEC play, it's going to be, you know, like it used to be, and people were yearning for this for a long time. It's going to be like back when, you know, in the Pearl days, whenever the hype was really real around the program.
Yeah.
Because that's, you got a good team, you got high expectations once again, fans are packing the stadium. So I think by the time we get to conference play, it's going to be a nightmare for teams to come into TBA once again. And I really hope so. Now, if I'm wrong, I'll be very disappointed. But I do believe that. I think by the time we get to conference play, we'll see that it's going to be tough to come in here. They'll struggle with a couple games on the road. But I think they run through SEC play for the most part.
I think they – look, if you get a crowd like that last night for a 9 o'clock tip-off in November against Georgia Tech, you're going to get 18,000 to 20,000 per game for SEC opponents. I fully believe that. And I applaud Tennessee's crowd for coming. Look, 9 o'clock games suck. There's no way else around it. You know, I mean, the energy level was kind of low, and it's because it's 9 o'clock at night. People are wrapping up a whole, you know, a long day. Come to a basketball game to enjoy it. You enjoy, you know, just the basketball. But the energy level was low. And I understand it. I don't blame you one bit. I'd be tired, too. Saw a couple people sleeping in the stands, like two people. I mean, it was funny. It was comical. Tennessee never – look, I know it got down to like 8 at one point, but they were never out of control when it comes to that game. Like, that, I think they always held Georgia Tech arm's length away. Like, okay, you can come get within 8, but we're not letting you any closer. That squad last night played well. And they played well when their backs are up against the wall, when the free throw shooting was down, when everybody was getting called for a foul. I mean, there were so many freaking fouls last night, man.
Yeah, it was people have been critical of the fouls that have been called in college basketball, especially SEC basketball for the last couple of years. Yeah, it seemed like it was very sloppy last night. I mean, at the same time, aggressive defense. I really love that they're utilizing the zone a lot. I like that because they're using their length. It was kind of expected, like I thought it was. I mean, it was a 13-point victory. I thought it would be a 12-point around there. Thought Tennessee was 12 points better than those guys.
The line was 16.
Yeah, they didn't cover, but, you know, at the same time, come out, and it wasn't pretty, but you got the win.
Yeah, I mean, that's the
best. I don't care how pretty it is, long as you get those Ws.
Right. So nothing to worry about. So everybody don't trip out over last night. Here's the thing. It's the same Tennessee teams you've seen in the past, like last year towards the end of the year. This time they're just ranked number 5 in the country. So folks are going to have this expectation, oh, we're number 5 in the country. We should come out and blow out every single opponent. No, it's not going to happen like that this year. The conference is too good. I mean, you look at LSU last night. Had themselves a little interesting game with Memphis. They took care of business down the end. Will Wade got the win. Look at Georgia. They go up to Temple and get beat. But I expect Georgia to be tougher once January comes around. Like, you're going to see this type of stuff. Hell, South Carolina's gotten beaten by Augusta University and Stony Brook. First 4 games of the season, 3 games of the season. So there's a lot of stuff to work on, but, man, this team plays so together. That's the thing. Such a tight-knit family group, and it shows. It shows. Talking to Jimmy Dykes after the game, he was very impressed with how this Tennessee squad came out and performed, especially when their backs were up against the wall. when it came to the second half, the shooting was not there, but they found a way to win, and they found a way to win comfortably. That's the biggest thing. That's what I took away from last night. Move on, erase it, get ready for Louisville now. Because Louisville in Brooklyn, and then with the winner possibly playing either, well, they are, they're going to play Kansas or Marquette, got yourself two tough games coming up. Marquette or Kansas is going to be tough. Louisville's going to be tough. So I look forward to it. I think it was a nice showing last night by both the fans and the players' chance. You know, look, Georgia Tech shot horrible from three-point land. If I'm not mistaken, it was like 4 for 21. It was just bad. So that's good on Tennessee for forcing those bad shots up and trying to make them play in transition, because I think Tennessee's defense played well last night. We'll take your phone calls on this too, 865-546-8200. The rundown for the day: David Ubben coming on at 1:20. Going to talk about his fantastic piece in The Athletic. A Tennessee football player, a walk-on right now, is also the CEO of a $1 million company. Some crazy stuff. Look forward to chatting with him about his story. We'll talk Vols as well. 1:15. Jason Martin is going to – no, I'm sorry, 2:15. Jason Martin from the Big Six from 104.5 The Zone in Nashville, and Outkick the coverage. He'll join us at 2:15. We'll talk Vols, Titans, throw in a little Preds. We're going to talk about it all. Got a great show lined up. Hope you guys are good. Hope you guys are warm wherever you're at, in the office, in the car. Be safe out there. Back on the other side. It's Optional Fox Sports Knoxville. I knew I'd get some tunes in here today. It's fantastic. I love it.
Always.
I love it, man. I love the tunes. I don't know who this is, but I love the jam.
Hump Day!
Who is this?
This is Cherub.
Okay, this makes you want to like go download the song.
Yeah, dude.
I'm feeling it. It's Optional on Fox Sports Knoxville. Just play that for the next hour and 40 minutes.
It really gets you going on this.
It
you does, know.
It's kind of like a. It's kind of like a small, like.
Yeah, it's one that
feeling
like, dude,
vibe.
It's like
thing.
A preview for the weekend. That's what it's doing to people. It's Hump Day. Still like nasty weather. Like as
it's
far
be
as
tomorrow
like,
too.
Yeah, I mean, will it ever not be cold and
I just
and rainy
see the sunshine?
Yeah. I can deal with the cold, but the nasty rain and the nastiness of it all.
Tomorrow's supposed to be maybe a little snow tomorrow night.
A little snow? Uh-oh.
Yeah. Y'all told me it didn't snow until...
You know what that means?
Oh, the hill.
No, well, the hill, yeah, that too. If it really gets icy out there to get to the station, it could be dangerous. Ice. But you got to get your milk and your bread sandwiches.
Well, that's true.
The snow's coming. And your eggs that you'll be able to cook if your electricity goes out.
And your cuffing.
Yeah, all of that.
Make sure you have that. Is that correct? Hey, real quick, Tennessee is looking. You know, J.J. Peterson, he's appeared in 3 games so far. So Tennessee keeping an eye out on him. Jeremy Pruitt talked about that during his teleconference today. And a few others when it comes to the new redshirt rule. Jeremy Pruitt says, we're very aware of how many games some of our players who would qualify for the redshirt rule, we know how many games they played in to make sure if we wanted to kind of apply that rule. So that makes sense. You know, he also says we're playing everybody that we feel has the best opportunity to have success. So that's, you know, Tennessee's going to keep rolling that out there and keep going forward with that. If you're looking for tickets for Tennessee Vanderbilt in Nashville, tickets are still on sale. They're going for, I think, $70 a piece in Nashville right now.
That ain't bad.
That ain't bad.
That ain't bad at all.
The UT Alumni Club over there had them for like 40 for like a special deal that was going on. But, you know, now you pay 70 and whatever. $70, pay that price without, please pay that price and please pay no more.
Yeah.
You know what he used to say in the stadium, Neyland Stadium?
And that's fantastic. Pay no more.
Man, there's a story that came out yesterday, and I've been waiting on this story because I was told he had a story coming out, and I was a little nervous. I texted Monday night. I said, TikTok, I'm waiting. Let's go ahead and bring him on now. From The Athletic, David Ubbin, my buddy's here with us today. David, congratulations on the great read, man, and I appreciate you making me wait that long. It was good.
Anytime, man. I appreciate it. You had to wait long. You were working since like August.
That's so true.
It's been an interesting saga, but people really enjoyed it, and we're always happy with that.
Now the story is about Grant, and I want to get the last name right. Furking. Is that how you pronounce
Furking,
it?
Furking. Yeah, the first R is silent. Furking.
Okay. So Furking. Yes. Yeah, so and pretty much he's a. And I'm gonna let you explain this, but he's a CEO of a company, you know, based out of his hometown, and kind of set it up for me. How a lot of people understand what journalists have to go through when they come up with stories like these. You know, they write these stories and how long they have to go through the process and things you have to wait on. Please take me through you said it's been going on since August, and I understand that, and I would love for you to take me through just kind of what you went through to kind of get this story written and it out there for folks to be able to enjoy.
Yeah, so basically, you know, he's a sophomore walk-on receiver who is the CEO of a million-dollar company, which is, listen, just to be a student and to play football or any sport is hard. It's a major time commitment, and adding on, I don't even know how many hours he's working a week of that. It's unbelievable, but basically, you know, I found out about this in August. I kind of started making some calls and asking around and then approached Tennessee to talk to him. But, you know, the NCAA rules are complicated and you're not allowed to leverage your status as an athlete to better any of your business interests, the name, likeness, all those kind of things. And so for him to be able to do an interview that basically kind of acknowledges that he plays for Tennessee and those kind of things, they had to get an NCAA waiver saying, we know about this. This business was, you know, pre-existing, and they're not, you know, it's not in a Tennessee push advertisement, basically. And so the NCAA was kicking it around for 2 or 3 months, and Tennessee had a change in their compliance office, which kind of bogged things down a little bit. But basically, we were able to get it done last week, and talk to some folks, and be able to bring what I think is honestly one of the craziest stories I've ever worked on.
Explain when folks hear. Now, look, I know what it means. Chance knows what it means, but a lot of people don't know what it means when you have to ask for permission to write a story, or not you asking permission. Well, you're kind of doing it, but then you're asking for the family to ask the NCAA or the university for permission to talk about their story. And I will go back and say this as a preface for folks that maybe know a previous story. I would say the UCF player that was very prominent on YouTube, you know, and was making money off that. He had to make a decision, but it didn't come down like that. I'm just talking about with the NCAA having to go through their process. Walk me through that. What was that like, having to deal with that, like you said, for almost 3 months?
Yeah, so the difference between Grant and the UCF player is basically the UCF player had a YouTube channel that was pre-existing, but he was, like, wearing UCF gear in his videos, and certainly playing football helped grow his notoriety. And so basically the NCAA essentially, you know, pointed out, or I think it was UCF, it was, you know, obviously the NCAA's rules, but I think the school is actually who put the kibosh on it, basically. But basically that, you know, his status as a UCF athlete was helping his business. And so obviously with Grant, you know, that's really not kind of what's happening. He doesn't really play very much, and this obviously was pre-existing. And if you look at their website, you know, it doesn't really mention him or him playing for Tennessee or any of that stuff. So, but yeah, when you start to go down, you know, you gotta basically, if somebody is a part of the team or part of the program, you know, you're gonna have to go through Tennessee to set something up to talk to them. A lot of the times, it's gonna be on the record, and so Grant obviously is in that. But even talking to his family, could have been an NCAA violation, basically. So the whole thing they had to have cleared by the NCAA. So, you know, I think that the conversation about whether or not that is ridiculous, I think, is a separate one altogether about the NCAA. But ultimately, it is a kind of crazy, compelling story that like I said, I'm glad people got to see.
With Grant, I mean, he's a part of the Tennessee program, walk-on type player, but he's there every day with the team, and he's traveling. Explain it to me a little bit in your eyes. What made this story really stick out? Like, what when you were interviewing Grant, like, and you heard something from him regarding his daily routine or how he goes about his landscaping type business, what was something that really just kind of stuck out and you kind of sit back and like, oh crap, okay, that's pretty crazy.
I mean, just the fact that this is impossible. I mean, I've never heard of anything like this. There was a USC player a few years back that had something similar, but I don't think his time demands were nearly as much. But I also think one of my favorite parts of the story is he's got four SEC schools that are paying him money, basically. Tennessee is obviously among those, but Auburn, Georgia, and Vanderbilt, you know, they do pine straw for those campuses as well. So Grant's playing for Tennessee and collecting checks from four SEC schools.
How is that possible?
It's on his client list. They're in the area, and it's sort of, you know, they're business entities just like anything else. And so it's like the business exists outside of him as a football player, and sort of, you know, he obviously college campuses make a lot of sense. Like all of Georgia State's campuses, they do in the Atlanta area. They think they have 8 or 10 satellite campuses in the area, so it makes sense. I mean, you think about how much ground beautification is what they call it. Happens on college campuses, why not get in the mix?
Did he I wonder if he went down to Auburn while Tennessee was playing and like checked up on his business and then got to catch a game?
He's got guys that are in quality control for that. It's tough for him to get around. He said he would go down on Sundays every now and then to Atlanta to kind of check up on stuff, but he's only in Atlanta, you know, 4 weeks out of the year, and it's such a regional business that, you know, they're all over the place. You know, they're in Birmingham and Charlotte, Nashville. There are a bunch of places in Alabama and Georgia and Tennessee, so they're all over the place.
That as did what were the, and for folks, you have to go read this article. It's The Athletic. It's pinned in David Ubbin's Twitter profile. Make sure to go to the website and search Tennessee Volunteers. The article will be up there. It's absolutely fantastic. What made you start kind of looking into Grant's story, and what were his, and I want folks to read the story, but I kind of think of what were his teammates thinking when they heard that, okay, that guy that's on the phone till 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, he's actually running $1 million business. Like, what was that response?
Funny. One, he still has three roommates. He's living in a house with four guys.
That's fantastic. And,
yeah, it's great. One of them, John Shoup, actually. Bob Shoup's younger son. He's living with him and a couple other guys. Most of the team, he's so low-key about it, most of the team doesn't even know. Eli Wolf told me he thinks 10 or 15% of the team knows. And Grant came in as a tight end and moved to receiver. And I talked to Marquez Callaway about it, and Callaway told me, yeah, he's like, for the first month or two, I didn't even know. And the same thing with Eli. Like, guys spend a ton of time with him, and they have no idea. I mean, it's not like he's picking up business calls in team meetings. You know, he sort of, you know, knows that's not going to be looked upon well. And so, you know, he just kind of goes about his business, and he didn't really talk about it that much. And Eli said, once I found out, I kind of started grilling him with questions because it just seems impossible. But it's not, and that's what makes it a great story. You know, like, I think it was Mark Twain, you know, truth, of course truth is going to be stranger than fiction because fiction has to make sense. And if you wrote something like this, it would be ludicrous. But here we are.
That's fantastic. Let me ask you a question when it comes to the NCAA. And you didn't write about it, type in the article when it comes to the NCAA and stuff like this. But I'll ask you the question. After you've done all this research, and after you wrote this article and you interviewed players and the family, and, you know, what is your opinion on these guys if they have the mindset of being able to go out and do something on their own outside of their athletic ability and try to make it in this world doing something a little different while still being a student athlete? You know, what's kind of your opinion now? You've been involved in this story about this young man who is making a lot of money, but he's very smart and he's doing it the right way. But what's your opinion on guys trying to go out and make a buck for themselves now with all the NCAA rules that surround college football and athletics?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that the story changed my idea. I've thought for a long time, you know, if we're talking about a perfect world, then yeah, I think certainly that it makes more sense, instead of pouring tons of money into facilities and out overgrown coaching salaries, that throwing players a little bit would make sense. But that all that toothpaste is out of the tube. It's not going to happen. But for the NCAA to actively prevent players from making money off of their name, likeness, and image, I don't think there's a case to do that. I do think it is actually immoral for them to prevent players from doing that. For a lot of these guys, they're never going to be more valuable than they are right now. And it's sort of separate from Grant's story, but looking at college football on a whole, I mean, there's a lot of guys who are going to be legends in college football and might not get a chance to play in the pros or might get hurt. You talk about guys like Marcus Lattimore. I mean, think about how much money he could have made at South Carolina and how much money he didn't make in the NFL because he was, you know, putting his body on the line for free. And his knee got ruined, and then we're never going to see him in the NFL. So that's that kind of stuff where it's just like, you know, keeping these guys away from that. I don't think that there is a reasonable moral case against that. I think certainly universities, I'd love to see it, but like I said, the toothpaste out of the tube, that's not going to happen. But there is not a reasonable case to prevent players from making money off their name, image, and likeness.
Well, I got you for two or three more questions. I that's a fantastic story, and I want people to go read it. You did a good job, but I really want to, and I want to get into the Tennessee, Missouri this weekend. You know, you've been out there at practices, and we've talked to the coach during the week, and we was on teleconference today. Kind of give me your overall feel of Tennessee coming out of that big Kentucky win. With the players and the atmosphere and the coaches, can they do something they didn't have a chance to do against Auburn? That is, capitalize one big win with another big win this weekend.
I mean, I think so. I look at Tennessee like this. You know, they've got five losses. Four of those were to teams that are in the top 13 of the CFP rankings.
Right.
The other was South Carolina, a game that they controlled and they let get away. When they have not played like elite teams, and we can talk about Florida. I think Florida's probably a little bit overrated, but still, they're ranked where they are. But when they have not played elite teams, they've been competitive. They've been the better team more often than not. They were the better team in that Auburn game. They were the better team in that Kentucky game. They were probably the better team in the South Carolina game. They didn't play very well in the second half. They let it get away from them a little bit. But it was close. They controlled that game until the fourth quarter. And so, you know, Missouri certainly is not an elite team. I think Tennessee acquits itself well. They'll have a chance to win. I think Tennessee gets the win this weekend, ultimately.
Is the Tennessee offensive line and the way they've been able to – last week it was more or less – they were playing really aggressive, and I thought they took advantage of Kentucky on the perimeter once they got to the outside and almost took Josh Allen kind of out of the game when it comes to – how they were setting up their offense. Where does this team go when it comes to, you know, making plays down the field? Do you think they can for some reason, you know, they did it against Auburn. They backed off somewhat the next 2 weeks, and then they come out, you know, against Charlotte, whatever, chalk that one up. And then they play against Kentucky where they try to stretch them downfield a good amount, and they have some success. Is that something they can continue to rely on, or is it more or less, okay, it's really all about how this offensive line performs, you know, from Saturday to Saturday?
I think so. I think you got to be a little aggressive. You know, I wrote about it the other day, but on the first play of Tennessee's first four drives, they took shots downfield on play action plays, and they turned it into 76 yards. You know, they and another, you know, they had Callaway open. But Garantano got hit, got underthrown, he couldn't make the play, but he had a guy there. So the opportunity has been there. And last week was kind of the first week they really got aggressive on first down instead of trying to run it off tackle and taking a one-yard loss like they did so many times throughout the early part of the season. So I think that aggressiveness, I mean, I think certainly makes Tennessee better. You know, the offensive line is getting a little better. They probably played their best game of the year against Kentucky. I'd say probably their second best game of the year was South Carolina, but they just, you know, they just have not, you know, their ceiling is still pretty low. They've gotten better, and you know you're not going to be able to pound it. But if you can do some things, if you know the defense is watching for play action or screens, or you know you can make some plays down the field, that softens up the box. And when you can have that, when you're running against, you know, 4 and 5, 6-man boxes, and you're putting two tight end sets in there, you're going to have a little bit more success. And I think that's what you're going to probably see Tennessee try to do a little bit more against Missouri is, you know, I think you're going to see those shots downfield. I think you're going to see some of those screens, some of the misdirection plays. You know, they're going to have to put some points on the board to win this game.
Hey, man, sorry at the game last night. What was your takeaway from Tennessee basketball? Just getting to sit back and kind of enjoy it and watch them.
I think you're going to have to win a lot of games with defense this year. You know, it's tough. You know, Rick Barnes said after the game, you know, they really missed Turner. They needed his scoring, and on a night when Schofield didn't really have it and Williams was getting fouled a lot and was missing some free throws, and he played okay, but...
Yeah,
you know they don't. It's tough because they don't have a guy that you can just clear out and say, "Hey, go get us a bucket," or you know, and even when you get Williams on the block, you know, you can't throw it down to him 20 times a game and say, "Hey, go get a bucket."
Right.
So it's, you know, I think that when you don't necessarily have that, I think that can hurt you in the long run. But certainly, you know, the team defense, the length, the effort was there, and that was an ugly game. The Georgia Tech definitely uglied up, kind of turned into a rock fight, but it was. You know, it was a good win for Tennessee. Anytime you're beating a Power 5 opponent in November, you know, I think you got to feel okay about that, especially doing it with, you know, doing it in double digits. That game was never really in doubt. You got to feel okay about yourself.
Yeah, once midnight came around, I was like, all right, I got to get the heck out of here. So it is what it is, right? 3 hours worth of basketball. But, David, please tell everybody where they can follow you and then also where they can go read your fantastic work, especially the story about Grant.
Yeah, come check out The Athletic, and like you mentioned, if you you know, check out my Twitter account, it is pinned up there at David Ubben, UBBEN. But yeah, check it out on The Athletic. We've got, obviously, I cover Tennessee. We've got a Titans writer, we've got a Predators writer, we've got a Braves writer, we've got everything. So whoever you like, we've got all the major teams covered, and plenty of national coverage as well, along with fantasy coverage. Our ever growing staff is we've got everything covered at this point.
That's fantastic. David, thank you so much for joining us, buddy. Look forward to seeing you this weekend. Have a good rest of the week.
For sure, anytime.
Thanks, brother. David Ubben, fantastic writer from The Athletic. Really, look, if you haven't read that story, go read that story. It's absolutely fascinating. We'll break it down a little bit on the other side. Coming back in. Going out with my boy Wayne. Talked to him last night as well. Little Wayne's doing good. Come see some Tennessee basketball sometime. I'm feeling it today. It's optional. Fox Sports Knoxville. I just take my time with all this shit. I still believe in that. I had someone tell me I fell off. Ooh, I needed that. And they want to see me pick back up. Well, where'd I leave it at? Found it. Top 10 best comedies.
Top 10 best comedies?
Yeah.
You're just going to throw that on me like that?
The movie. This was in.
Oh.
Pineapple Express.
Oh, yeah, it was in that. That's a good one. I feel like it's been a lot of movies. I never noticed. It's just, you know.
This song?
Yeah. Or a lot of commercials and movies.
It hit the commercial sphere once it was out in this movie.
Oh, yeah. MIA?
Such a good movie. That's the first thing I thought of when I...
Pineapple Express.
When he stuck his foot right through the front window of the cop car. Like, that's just funny stuff. Like, I get it. That movie... That's one of those movies you don't make a second one because it definitely won't live up to the first one. First one was fantastic. There's no need to even try to do a second one. Absolutely love that movie.
It's funny. What would your second one be? Like, you can't really make a sequel to
Apple
movie.
Express. Or
Apple Express. Seth Rogen. Funny guy.
You can make a movie. Anybody can make a movie about pot smoking.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, like, a sequel to Pineapple Express? Like, I don't know. I feel like, yeah, like you said, like, it was good on the first one. Yeah. And you can't really do a sequel to that.
Some sequels are just horrible.
A lot of sequels are horrible. Not even just some, a lot. We'll say a lot.
Best sports
sequels?
Yeah.
Major League 2 was good.
Would it have to be Rocky?
Rocky is obviously good. Let's see. What else? There's a lot when we're talking about.
Mighty Ducks.
Yeah, Mighty Ducks was good.
Wasn't there a Mighty Ducks 3?
Yeah, there was maybe even up to 4.
Is that when they went back to college?
I think so. That was like Team USA or something, or maybe that was 2. There's a lot, man.
Team USA was 2, and then them going to college.
Was that the third one?
Pretty sure that was the third one. They should make a 4th one with like their NHL players now.
Yeah.
But like old
and
NHL
they
players.
All landed on the same team. Yeah.
Gordon Bombay figures it out.
Yeah, Banks.
He gets them all traded.
And Banks, Charlie Banks.
Yeah.
Flip the risk.
Yeah, exactly. Who was the other kid? The one that came over from the Hawks?
I can't remember. There was Goldberg.
It was Charlie.
He's the big fat kid.
Charlie. Charlie was Joshua Jackson. And then Banks was the kid that Banks was the kid that came over from the Hawks when he lived in a different zip code. And Emilio Estevez pointed it out. Banks. He said, if you're going to play, you have to play for the Ducks.
Yes.
Expected to see you tomorrow at practice.
That's right, Banks.
Such a good movie. Probably the best scene is when they're going through the mall on their roller skates.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Roller blades.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of those movies, man. I don't know. You can watch Mighty Ducks anytime and all the time.
Of course. If it's on, I'm probably going to watch it.
I'm trying to figure out, like, what's another good sports sequel.
This is not a lie.
Like, they should have just made up another Rudy.
Made up another Rudy.
Like Rudy makes the pros.
No, Rudy could never like make the pros.
Funny, no, I know that.
Like,
I'm surprised some idiot didn't try that. I'm sure it was pitched.
Rudy on the kickoff, team didn't even make sense at all either. Rudy.
Why? They called his number.
I know they called his number. Get out there. He's just so small, man. Rudy would get killed.
I mean, he's the same size as Renfro.
He seems
Hunter
smaller.
Hunter Renfro.
He seems smaller.
Than Hunter Renfro?
Rudy does.
He got the big sack.
Maybe it was just those big gargantuan pads he was wearing that just didn't make any damn sense.
You know what the cool thing is? Go check out the behind the scenes and how they made that movie. Like, they filmed most of that movie at Holy Cross.
I think I knew that. I think
it was
remember
neat how they
briefly.
Put it all together. And then, you know, go look at all the characters that were in that movie and where they are now.
Yeah.
Vince Vaughn, John Favreau.
Yeah.
It just amazes me. Like, it's one of those. Sean Astin never really got anywhere after that movie. Now, let me take that back. Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings, he was a prominent character in that. But other than that, he just didn't do anything. I mean, I don't remember him. What, he was in that stupid movie with Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore. 50 First Dates.
Alex says they already made the sequel and This Is the End. I don't know. What movie is that?
No, they didn't. That's not the sequel and This Is the End. Yeah, This Is the End, you know, where they're hanging out at James Franco's house. And
That's supposed to be the sequel to
the
what?
The Devil Comes.
He didn't really give me a lot of context there.
I don't think that
I
was
checked. It. I checked the tweet late, so
that's not.
We kind of moved fast. I'm wondering what the context.
Chip
was.
Payne said it broke my heart when I found out that Rudy movie was fake because I had a Rudy moment in high school the same year the movie came out. Wait a minute, what are y'all talking about? Rudy was fake.
Rudy is kind of fake, dude. I don't think it was a true story.
How much fake is in this Rudy movie here we're talking about?
Is Rudy supposed to be a true story or something?
Well, I would sure as hell think so. You're telling me it's fake?
I don't know, dude. I'm not the biggest Rudy fan. I'm not going to sit here and lie. I really didn't like that movie that much.
I got to Google, was Rudy real? This might break my heart today. Was Rudy real?
It probably was. He probably was not. It was probably a fictional character. Not the biggest Rudy fan.
It's a biopic.
I don't know, dude. I'm not the biggest Rudy fan. I really didn't like that movie a lot. I really cannot lie.
In the real-life scenario, however, it was Divine who came up with the idea to dress Rudiger.
Rudiger.
Wait a minute. Did you just say you don't like the movie?
Not the biggest Rudy fan. Not gonna lie.
What the hell do you not like about it? The soundtrack's great. The acting's really good.
I didn't really think it was that
great. The storyline was good.
Was the acting really good, or was it just good in that time?
John Favreau was good. Vince Vaughn was...
Does the movie Rudy age well?
I did that for you.
Does the movie Rudy age well?
That's
the question.
Everybody's saying Rudy was offsides. Damn you, Rudy wasn't offsides.
Rudy was definitely offsides.
He might have jumped the snap.
That was one thing that always has kind of... grinded my gear. Rudy was offsides, man.
They didn't have a lot of time to film the movie when they did it at halftime of the Notre Dame game.
Rudy was so far offsides. So far offsides.
This is sickening to me.
This is like killing you over here.
Yeah, it is. No, y'all are on here saying it's fake and all this stuff, and it. Y'all damn crazy. How the hell is it fake? If it's fake, okay, tweet me parts of the movie that weren't fake.
We can
call in.
We can, you know.
546-8200.
Someone please let Trey know that it's fake.
Yeah, what the hell do you
Rudy
talking
was
about?
Offside. He was too small. There was no way he was going to be able to compete.
Hey, it wasn't a damn documentary, but y'all crazy. It's optional Fox Sports Knoxville.
Hello. I'm your website. And I'm Wade.
It's optional Fox Sports Knoxville wrapping up the first hour. Jason Mark going to join us 2:15. Talk Vols, Titans, throwing a little Preds. We're going to talk about it all.
Let's do it. I'm with it.
Rudy Rudiger appeared in a cameo as a fan behind his father, who was Ned Beatty, during the final scene in the movie Rudy. Did not know that.
Yep.
I have to go back and find that now.
Now you know, sir.
I'm a little depressed when I read this.
Rudiger, this is what broke your heart.
Yeah, it did. Rudiger said the movie is 92% true.
Only 92%.
How the hell did he come up with 92? Like, what? How did he? Whatever. The players did not lay down their jerseys. That's heartbreaking. Rather, the team captain and one other player requested that he be allowed to play. Dan Devine is given an antagonistic role in the film, but the coach was actually one of the biggest motivators to return to the team. I'm getting a little pissed off now. And finally, the groundskeeper and former player Fortune is a combination of three different people.
Three different people, Trey.
That is sickening. Like, that is upsetting to me. Like, how the hell am I supposed to look at Rudy the same now when it
comes
out 84 times?
I told you it was a trash movie.
Still not a trash movie.
I told you it was a trash movie.
I choose to believe they walked in there and put their jerseys down on his desk.
Anybody who loves Rudy is free to call in. 865-546-8200.
No, I don't even
Nobody's going to call in. Nobody likes the movie.
The movie's great.
Great is such a strong term for Rudy.
The soundtrack is fantastic. Chip Payne said, I tried to tell you. Well, damn it, Chip.
Hey, Chip's a smart man. He tried to tell you.
Now you're going to tell me the Mighty Ducks wasn't true. Now my world's really going to be turned upside down.
Also, Santa Claus, not true,
just
Trey.
Give me out of the hour now. Just give me out. It's optional Fox Sports Knoxville.
The Escape Game in downtown Knoxville is the perfect one-hour adventure. You and your squad will be